piss. Keep it simple, stupid.
Testicles 1-2, testicles.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. This is Paranoid Radio Podcast, and I am your humble host, Trebles Garcia. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank the Lord for allowing me to be here today, and I want to thank every single one of you for allowing me to enter your space. Do not forget to drop a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It allows other people to enjoy the show as much as I enjoy making it. And do not forget to check us out at ParanoidRadio.com. Cough up some of the new shirts. Look at that. I'm fly as a motherfucking pigeon. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. Ooh, we got JB too. Look at him with his buffness. His muscles are ripping through the fucking shirt. He's got one of the classic relics there. That's that. That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you check us out, ParanoidRadio.com. You can listen absolutely free. And you could also check out 2 weeks ago, the God Pill 333 episode where we talked about horny dolphins. That's right. Now, we have an amazing episode lined up for all of you guys. And it is my humbling pleasure to jump in from the deep end of the pool and set the fucking mood. Striking with iron is hot. JB, he's been here before. He's no stranger to Paranoid Radio Podcast. He's also a light warrior, a patriot, a longtime leader in truth-seeking movement, and has been on a digital front lines exposing the deep state cabal, NWO agenda, with this mission of influencing the masses into connecting with their higher consciousness and discovering our true potential as human beings. He's inspired me to do that a lot, if anything. Also known as the Great Awakening and the 5D Ascension, ladies and gentlemen. JB is also a true warrior who makes no claims of being a saint. He fights for the truth and of the light. He also understands the world we live in and will attack evil with ruthless savagery when needed. He does not hide from his dark side. We all have a dark side and the past. That does not make us any less worthy of being good people. JB is going to share with us his very personal and intimate story of his dark past, a time when Hollywood, 9/11, and crystal meth sent him spiraling into a world not known to him, filled with the opportunity to capitalize on a life of crime. From outsmarting the corporate system like Catch Me If You Can to becoming Hollywood's main supplier of crystal meth before Breaking Bad. Dude, did you write that fucking series? Don't answer. Wait, answer later. All right. To inmate in federal prison and poker pro, he says it's all been a big adventure and would not change a thing. Everything is a learning experience. It sure is. I'm more of a chess guy myself. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to welcome back my good friend and light warrior, master of video editing, content creator, businessman, a regular guest, and who is going to share his story with us over a multi-part episode. Please welcome the legendary JB from Rogue One Media. What's up, big dog?
Hey, chess? I like chess too, man. Played a lot of chess.
Yo, JB, you are one of the, I want to say, seven wonders of Paranoid Radio Podcast. One of the persons that has generally not only opened his heart, but his platform, his information, and his mind, his story, right? At Paranoid and for Paranoid and for myself. I cannot ask for a better friend. I cannot ask for a better colleague and a better example in this area of the world, in this full multimedia adventure that I'm having right now. You really motivated me to do many things, and I do mimic a lot of things that you and Morph put out for me in the beginning. So I'm never going to forget that you've been fucking with us since day one, back before I had 750 followers for the past 3 fucking years. And loyalty is everything, dog.
You had 200 followers. That was years ago.
Yeah.
200 followers. Now you're at what, like 18,000 or something?
Yeah, 19. Thank God. Amazing. And thanks because of the loyalty of people like you and every single person that's sharing us on Instagram today. Tell the people where they can find you one more time.
Yeah, right on the screen if you're watching. If you're listening, it's Instagram at Renegade Family of Light. And just jump in, hop in, send the DM. Comment, get a conversation going, whatever's up, let's kick it. So
mischievous upbringing. Yes. Talk to me about that, bro. How does your story start? Damn.
Well, you know, we know each other now few years, and you know who I am, what I'm about. I'm about the light. I'm about, you know, raising consciousness. You know, I've always been a spiritual person, even young as a kid. I've always had like spirituality, had, you know, out of body experiences when I was a child. We'll talk about that on an episode, astral projections and stuff. And, you know, I got into trouble with every, you know, as kids. I was one of the only kids in my town from a broken home. So I came from like a middle class Italian neighborhood, and everybody had a mom and a dad and a house and security. And I was, you know, a single mom raised. So I was pretty much on my own, me and my sister, while she was working. We had to take care of ourselves. And I was mischievous and curious and, you know, started gravitating towards the maybe like big brother figures or father figures that weren't really good role models, and started doing drugs when I was young, cutting out of school, smoking pot, taking LSD, going on these acid trips, but not causing any trouble, not, you know, doing any criminal stuff. And then eventually got it together in high school, cleaned up my act, got good grades, was playing, you know, sports, football and all that stuff. And then just went about life and wanted to be an actor. And I wanted to, you know, be an actor, filmmaker, or an entrepreneur. Those were my two biggest passions, like business. Like Donald Trump back then was the only entrepreneur. Like that word wasn't used back in those days. It was just, if you said entrepreneur, it was Donald Trump. He was the only association you could use with the word entrepreneur. Now everybody uses that word. But so to me, it was like, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be like Donald Trump, because from New York, that's what, you know, you guys didn't meet him until he started running for presidency.
Not to be rude or anything, but Latinos for Trump 2024.
That ain't rude.
Running, way to run from it, motherfucker.
That ain't rude, man. That's needed. That's perfectly welcome. Yeah. So New York, that's where it was, and it started. And then I said, you know what, I'm going to take, while I'm young, I'm still 22 years old, I dropped out of college. I said, I got to go take my shot at Hollywood and see if I can make it in the film business. And I just left New York and went to the Bay Area first for a few years, just to get my training done. I've taken theater classes, film classes, acting classes, doing all that stuff. And I loved the Bay Area. It was Marin County. It was a great place. A lot of girls. There was, you know, some weed, and that was about it. But it was great times. And then finally got an agent, got a manager, and moved to Hollywood. So once I got to Hollywood, like I was like a kind of like a big shot in the Bay Area. And then I get to Hollywood and I'm a zero. I'm like, you know, invisible. Like everybody's gorgeous. Everybody's good looking. Everybody's somebody from somewhere else. And you're just a number. You're just like wallpaper. Like,
do you think that's because the massive flow of everybody trying to do the same thing? Is it because there's too many people doing the line?
Well, yeah, because everybody that comes from their town, they're like a special person from their town. But once they get into the big pond of Hollywood, now everybody from every town, everywhere, that's the special person, is all converging on this one spot to try to make it. So there's only so many parts and so many roles and so many jobs that they, so you get auditions and you get like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people show up that look just like you, kind of like similar, you know, like they all got the same kind of look that you bring that. So you're not special no more. You have to find a way to be you. And you can't blend, you know, try to be these people. Wow. You got to be yourself. And it's very, very like just kind of just, it really,
it's a doggy dog situation at that point.
It's depressing because if you don't just make it right, if you don't have that big break early, like some people do, and there's some people that are terrible, no talent, and they, you know, they make it big. And if you're fighting and you got talent and you're passionate, like me, I was, and some of the guys that I was starting to connect with, we had, you know, we had that passion and drive. But, you know, it's a hard place to scale, and not, they chews you up and spits you out. And back then, there was none of this satanic pedophile cult shit going around. So I was there, but I didn't see none of that stuff. Like it wasn't even on the radar in my brain. Like I thought Hollywood was great. And, you know, to make it, you were an artist. And I looked up to all those people that I can't stand now.
These people, just quick question. You mentioned that you don't think that maybe it was more on a hush hush, on a need to know basis.
Absolutely. You had to be
level to that shit.
Yeah, you had to be somebody. I realize this now because I look at like people like Mel Gibson, who in the 80s, he was a star. And then he started seeing the stuff that was going on. And he was like, holy shit, this is pretty, you know, dark. Like, you know, this is bad, but he's already in. So you had to be kind of already in, like, you had to be like somebody that was like on the rise to be a star in order to be exposed to that kind of stuff. So you got to make the list first.
Now it's like, now they are putting you on the list and they're just handing out tickets to left and right. It's public.
Totally
different. It's almost designed that way. It's almost to a point where they kind of want you to know so that you could make it socially accepted.
Yeah. Well, like the Illuminati is not a secret no more. They're recruiting people. I get mail. I get emails. I get paper mails of recruitments of trying to join the Illuminati. I'm like, aren't you guys supposed to be a secret society? Why are you publicly recruiting people now? I'm like, it just goes to show that you guys are desperate for members.
Panicking.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. You need people now. So you're just going, they're basically going like mainstream now. So the secret society thing is gone. And same with Hollywood, like that whole thing. Now it's like, they're trying to glamorize the whole satanic thing, the whole, you know, stuff that little kids, they expect to just join in and want to be a part of that now. So yeah, different times, different place, but yeah, nothing like I ever thought it was like, and back then it was not something I was exposed to. Thank God, because who knows?
So talking about the exposing, initial exposure to crystal meth while working odd jobs in California.
Yes. Ha. So, as an actor, you take whatever job you get, you know, you work and then you're just trying to get a part. You're not trying to make a career out of whatever job you got. So I was a landscaper. I was working for a landscape designer. We would do like celebrity houses and stuff. And I actually learned a good skill doing that, because we were not just mowing lawns. We were designing the landscape, like the flowers and this and
there's how science it looked. To that.
Yes. Yeah. He was making great money and paying us $10 an hour off the books. And we were digging ditches, digging holes and labor. But it was all right. You know, we were young and it was hard work, but it was cash money and off the books. And then like our first week or first paycheck, we go to his house to collect. And it was like, hey, you know, let's hang out and, you know, we'll go out tonight. We'll get some drinks. And he throws down some lines of crystal meth. And I'm like, I heard of this stuff. Like, I know it's bad. I've heard of people that were like, you know, zombies and stuff on this stuff. And so I wasn't really looking to do anything, but like my buddy who was a friend of mine, he was like, "Ah, fuck it, let's go." And I'll try any drug back then. I never smoked crack or did heroin, but everything. But I would take LSD, I would take ecstasy or whatever. So I was like, "All right, I'll give it a shot," and and did that rail, and that was it. It was like all of a sudden I was like, "Wow, this is for me." Like this is like. This is like too good. It was just too, the dopamine, all that those firing off neurons in your head makes
everything. For the record, people, euphoric. It doesn't do the same thing to everybody.
Correct.
It shuts me down. It shuts me down.
Correct.
My muscles start, I shut down.
Different effects down when on I different fuck people. With it. I agree. Yes, that is 100% true, because all I have, I didn't even know about what like the meth head, but now all we ever see is the crystal meth head with the no teeth and the white trash guy.
Poster boys.
The trailer park and the girl and they they're all just losers. That's not true. That's not true. There's doctors, there's lawyers, judges, actors, producers. There's any walks of life. They're all doing it. Like, it's not like that poster doesn't tell the story. So people that you would never even suspect are on this stuff are on it. And, you wouldn't know it.
That poster board was is a stupid scheme campaign to promote it. Yeah, they're promoting for you not to do it, but they're also making you. There's no bad publicity, bro. It's a double entendre.
They're trying to basically say only these people are caught doing this stuff. Only these losers, these trailer park people, not us, not these white collar people.
For the people that are publicly all like, oh my god, these freaking people that want to protect the environment with fucking EV cars, right? All this bullshit, but yet they don't want to do petroleum, right? Those are the people that would complain about the drugs in the street, and that's the picture that they made it for. You know, that's the crowd.
And they're
probably doing it.
They're all doing it. Believe me, it would, you'd be shocked at like how many people, especially in Hollywood, it's like everybody was in, that is in the business or whatever it was doing. It's not like you just smoking crack pipes like you think it is. They just do it and they function. And that's what I started doing, is that like I saw it as a tool for me to maximize the amount of hours that I could put in and get creative stuff done, because I was basically shooting my own documentary that became like a reality show of just me filming myself with my camcorder of my life as an actor. I'd go to auditions and I'd be filming it, but nothing. This is a time, you got to realize, this is a long time ago. This is before YouTube, social media, Instagram, before reality TV shows were out. The only reality TV show that existed was an MTV reality show, MTV The Real World. But other than that, there was nothing like we have today, man.
I hear
so,
you.
So I didn't have any platforms to post my stuff on, even though it was like I was ahead of my time, because nobody was walking around filming themselves. I was like the only one doing
this. Is before the blogging era,
I think I invented it. It was like I just took the camera and I pointed it towards myself, and then I flipped the screen and flipped it, and I was like, all right, I could film myself. And I just went around and I filmed everything, everybody, everywhere, and made these documentary, like these little episodes. I went to Sundance Film Festival, filmed everything, and it just turned into a thing. And I knew I was onto something. I knew it was going to be something that was going to catch, but I was like, the studios just weren't there yet. They weren't ready for that yet. So there was nowhere for me to put it. So I shelved it, and I had all this footage or all these episodes. And then I was just like, let me shelve it and take a break and see what I can work. Maybe I'll start pitching it in a different way, try to get a studio to bite on it. So I took a break from Hollywood and went to to the Bay Area. And so now I'm doing crystal meth. North. Yeah. So, I mean, I was doing crystal meth for a year, 98. Yeah, so it was about like my second year doing it. So I was like a regular user.
Holy
and,
fuck.
And working, and I was working, editing all night long. And then I would go to work in the day and then come home and start editing. So I was living on like no sleep because I was doing this drug. I'd go days and days without sleep. But I was trying to get as much done as I could. So it was like I was a functioning addict, and I wasn't, you know, sitting there like losing teeth or just like, you know, robbing people. But what happened was, it does create these things where your brain does just think about stuff and come up with ideas. So at least for me anyway, some people sit home and watch porn all day on that stuff. That's not what it did for me. It actually like sparked ideas. And so I used my brain on it more, and I was able to observe things a lot better, just a lot better observant. And I noticed when I was like in like the where like a hardware store buying some tools or something, I just like looked around and I'm like, well, what if I bought this tool and then went home with my receipt and then came back and took the exact same item from the shelf and just walked up to the counter and returned it with this receipt? Would they give me my money back while I still have the one I purchased at my house? And I was like, let me try it. And I was like, let me give it a shot and see what happens. I was thinking maybe they had some kind of barcode security thing, but you know, like something that would identify it as like not being purchased. Like this, every item has a specific
now
code.
I think they have that. Now I think it's like
years later.
Yeah. And they need like a real good freak ERP system to like,
let me just tell you something. Even today, the systems are so freaking so full of holes, so easy to exploit. That's all I got to say about that.
Like, we're not encouraging you to go steal. It's funny.
It hasn't changed much. I've noticed. I'm like, it's still pretty accessible.
And when you know what, later. It's also awesome that now you can steal, I think, 900, at least in California, you can steal $900 worth of stuff on the daily. Well, and you won't get arrested. So
wow.
You
don't even need times are, now they just basically, it's like a job. It's like you can have a resume out to be a thief, and they'll hire you.
I stole two CVSs and four Walgreens and four food
cops
for less.
Cops aren't arresting anybody. You know, it's guy. People are just walking in and going blank and just filling up their bags and walking out right in front of your face nowadays.
And so, you know, it's funny. You can't stop them, even if a civilian, because securities can't do shit. They're observing reports. Their job. So if a civilian takes, you know, law into his hands and tries to stop and puts his hands on that
person,
they're civil suit. Yes, sir. Yep. It's fucking like the squatter shit that's happening. Not trying to make it conspiratorial here because you're telling me your story, but it's the truth, dog.
Hey, listen, everything's connected. Everything ties in. Yeah. So I go back and I buy a drill. And I go home, I come back, and now you got to be slick about it. You can't just walk in and grab the thing. You got to kind of blend in with the store. And it was just a hardware store. And they were very, very like low-key. Like they had a register that printed out the receipt. It wasn't even like a computer system. It was just like a paper receipt printed out. But I wanted to see if there was a code for this item to tell me. I needed to gather information now to say if this—
A trial run. Yeah.
Total research. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Research. It's like, does every item have its own code where they can identify it and separate it from the rest? Because there's 10 of the same items on the shelf. Do they all have their own code? That's what I wanted to find out. So I take it. I go back. I say I want to return it. And she gives me the money back. And now I have the item at home and I got my money back. So it's free. So I got the item for free, but it's not like I stole it. It was like, I bought it and just returned and got my money back. So it's like, it's free. And it was kind of like a legal way of doing it without like trying to stuff it down your pants or trying to hide it and shoplift it out of the store.
And if you ever wanted to sell the other one in the street, you just made double your money on nothing.
Correct. If I wanted to sell it, now I got my money plus the money, but no tools. But now the light bulb goes off. And I'm like, wow, that worked. And I was like, okay. So now I'm trying it at a different store and then a different store. And I'm trying to do the same. I'm just kind of buying a thing. And I'll do like a small thing to test it first. Like just like a, you know, a cheap thing. I'll just grab it and just kind of do that and then return it. And now I know I can start getting the more high ticket items. And then I hit the Home Depot. And the Home Depot, everybody kind of just knows it's a gigantic store. This is years ago. The security was just so non-existent. At the time, they did have the guy that would check your receipt at the when you're walking out the door. But I'll get to that. And so I'm like, wow, this is insane. Like I could just start grabbing drill. And this is before they were locking the drills up. This is the reason why they did all this stuff. It was because of me that they got locked up.
Well, now they're asking you. Well, I think they started. You gotta guess
the personnel to actually bring you to the thing to get now, it off the shelf.
In 2006, I picked up a salesman job selling perfumes and promo bottles at Home Depot parking lots to reach people. Hey, bam, you know what? Blah, 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 whatever. And eventually one of those dudes that was out there told me, you want to make a quick 50 bucks? I was like, shit, let's go. 16 years old. Come on, bro. And he told me return tools. Same thing. And stuff, little things. And
racket.
And since I was younger, I didn't have an ID. They did it. Did he give you the money back?
So you return it, and so you don't have the ID. And back then, it was easy. They just gave you store credit. They gave you a store credit card.
And I always looked older than 16.
You could sell that. Uh-huh. And you could sell that. So like this was going on. I just figured it out on my own. Nobody told me how to do it. I was a solo guy. I did my own shit. And I just was like, wow, this is like something I could like, you know, really start.
You probably pioneered the shit out of that, bro.
Well, you know what? Like I always lived by the law of karma. So I knew it was like, there was a thing in the back of my head saying you shouldn't be doing this. And you know, like you're doing bad things. So it was like, I wasn't ready to jump in full fledged yet. It was just kind of sporadic until, you know, like once we, what I'm telling you is that like, once like 9/11 hit. And then, I was just like, I went into like a depression and I was, you know, doing the crystal meth, I just said, you know what? Fuck it. The world's coming to an end. I was like, fucking nothing means anything anymore. Fuck this acting shit. Why I want to be an actor now? The freaking towers just went down. Like, you know, like what is it? You know, what is real and what is not real now? I'm like, it's all changed. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to dive into this whole criminal freaking life. And I want to see how far I could take it. I don't care how bad it is. I don't care about the karma. I was like, I want to see because I'm pretty good at it and I'm pretty smart. And I want to see how far I could take it. Mm-hmm. I want to outsmart the system. I want to beat the corporations at their game. That's where it was became a challenge. Like, catch me if you can. It was like, I want to see how far I can go. And you know, that's when I started going pro with it. And I was going into Best Buys. I was getting like flat screen monitors, which were like, you know, thousands of dollars back then just for a computer.
Get the fuck out.
And so like, it was like a whole elaborate system where like I would buy items and then I would come back. And when you go into Best Buy, like each place has a slightly different system. So Best Buy, it was so easy. They would just tag your items when you walk in the door. They would tag your items. So I would purchase something, then leave and then bring back a couple of cheap items so they can tag those items, because those tags told the staff that he already purchased this item.
Yeah.
It already belongs to him. He's returning it, but he could walk around the store with it because it's got a tag.
So oh, God.
Yeah. So they would tag my cheap item. I would take the tag off that cheap item, and then I would just, you know, smoothly stick it on a really expensive item, like a computer or a laptop or anything. And I would just put that tag on it. Mm-hmm. And it was just a color tag. That's all it was. It was so simple. Yeah. You just take it off and put it on here. And then I would take it. And then I would go to the counter to leave. And I would buy like some other cheap stuff. And then they would say, oh, what about that? And I'd be like, no, I already have this. This is already mine. Because they would see the tag and they would say, okay, you go right through. So then I would just walk it out with the stuff.
Oh my fucking God, dude.
Easy peasy, man. Easy peasy. And then
by yourself, you didn't have a team doing it yet.
Yeah, but it's all psychology too. Like you act a certain way and you throw them. It just, you make them, you can't make them suspicious. So you got to be smooth about everything. And so I would just kind of act like I was distracted. I would be like, say I'm on the phone. I'd be like, yeah, all right, I'm at the store. You know, I'll talk to you. All right, I'm hold on a second. Yeah, how are you? You know, like kind of like I'm busy. Can we check this stuff out? Yeah, that's mine. And she would just be like, nobody cares. And they just like, okay, yeah, you know, and then next. And they're just looking at the line of people that they got to deal with. They're not looking at me, you know. But if I start acting weird, you trigger. Even if they don't know something's wrong, you just trigger something that they're not quite sure about. Then they might question you.
That's when they start, yeah. Because of your behavior.
Yeah, let's check your receipts. But I had everything in place, man. Like I would go from one store, like say one Best Buy, I would buy the stuff and then I would take that exact same receipt and I would immediately shoot over across town to the next Best Buy, same day, same time, and grab the same exact stuff and then just walk out with that receipt that I just used to purchase the other stuff. But oh, they wouldn't look and see which store it came from. They would just maybe see the date and maybe not. They would just see, they would check the items. And then, so I could just walk in and just grab everything that I was on that receipt and just walk out and show them the receipt. And then the guy at the door would just wave me by, because he just wants to see that you got a receipt to show the stuff that's in the cart. Even if it's a garbage receipt, half the times he doesn't look at it. But if he does, I got all the correct items. It matches up. If he, you know, if he actually sees that it's not the same exact store, yeah, but he never looks that.
He's not gonna look at the freaking address, bro. No one.
And it's worse now. Who reads the fine print? Yeah, they're worse now. They could care less more now. But even if there was a hero guy, I had it in place. So I had so many different ways of doing it, whether I was buying the stuff and returning it or walking in with receipts and walking out with it. It was so easy. I could go to anywhere. I just basically, whatever I wanted, I had for free. It was like, if I need a new bedspread, I'd go to Macy's and I would do the exact same thing at Macy's. I had a bedspread. If I needed this, I would buy stuff and I had it. I never paid for anything anymore. It was like a life of free ticket life where you could just walk in and anything you want, you just take it. It's yours. That's how it was. And I just
never moved state and tried it somewhere else.
I went up and down the California coast. I started renting trucks and going from like up the coast and mapping it out and hitting store after store after store and just loading up the trucks. And then I would come back and have stacks and stacks and stacks and stacks of merchandise. Then I started selling on eBay. I created an eBay account and just started moving the stuff on
eBay.
Dude,
what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, dude, I had like my apartment was just filled with like merch, like computers and laptops.
You were addicted to theft.
It was too exciting. It was too much fun. I was good at it. It was like I was winning. I was winning this game of wits. And I was like, their system is against mine, and I'm exploiting it for my own good. So like, I'm better than them. I'm smarter than them. And yeah, that's how I felt. So, I mean, but, you know, you start getting lazy. And eventually, no matter what, as good as you are, the odds are coming that eventually there's going to be something that trips you up or somebody's going to do something. It never could just go forever because there's always going to be mathematically the odds of something happening that doesn't go your way. And so, there was the time where, hey, I'm walking out. I thought I was the shit now. I thought I was unstoppable. I was strung out. I had a carton full of like tools, power tools from Home Depot that I'm walking out with. I got my receipt. And then the guy's like, wait, whoa. He's like, you didn't walk in with this stuff. Like, this isn't stuff that you had when you came in, or you didn't buy this. I didn't see the buy. And I was just like, what are you talking about? And it started getting like escalating with my suspicion. And now they want to check and see the cameras. And now they want to check. And now it's like they're calling the cops. And now the cops show up. And the cops,
but they can't hold you in the cell. They can't. They can't take that way, that freedom.
I mean, I didn't try to run because I didn't know back then. I'd never been arrested before. So I was still trying to act like I was in the right. Like, hey, what do you know? This is legit. And I was still standing my ground because I didn't know what to do. I didn't plan for that part yet. So check this out. The cops show up. Cops like, all right, blah, blah, blah. We got this. We're going to take this guy. Boom. They take me and he's walking me. He's like, just be clean. He's like, just be straight with me. He's like, did you take this stuff or not? He's like, you know, you got one way or two ways to play this. He's like, you work with me, I'll work with you. I was like, all right, I took it. He's like, all right. He's like, let's go to your freaking car. Let's go to your thing. I want to see what you got.
Oh, you're fucked.
He pops open the trunk and he sees this packed trunk of merchandise, like electronics, power tools. He's like, oh, he's like, so you're a pro. He's like, we got ourselves a pro here. He's like, tell you what I'm going to do. This is Hollywood. He goes, I'm going to take all of this and then I'm going to leave and then you're going to leave and you're not coming back here and you're not doing this ever again at this store. And then we're done here today. And he took all my merchandise for himself, robbed me. And I was like, deal.
Scratch the fuck. Shut the front door. Wait.
Yep.
The cop.
Yep. The cop basically played Home Depot like, yeah, we got this. We're going to take care of this guy.
The biggest gang in the United States of America.
They are.
The red and blue sirens, fucking guys in the fucking Hollywood. Orca colored. Yeah.
And this was during the Hollywood days when they were dirty as motherfuckers. And I didn't even know about it. Like before that show came out.
They still are. They got here in LA. The precinct in LA. They have their fucking, they have cop gangs.
Yeah, they are. They're a freaking gang. Yeah. So I was like, done, deal. You can have it. You can have all my stuff. I'll take that deal any day of the week. And I was like, man, I can't believe he just rolled me. Like that guy rolled me. But it was like,
you had money saved up. You were economically stable. Yeah, okay, for sure.
I was rolling. Like, you know, but I didn't want to go to jail. You know, like I didn't want that. So now should have got, you know, stopped, but I didn't. And so I kept going. And then now it's Black Friday.
He enabled you more, right?
Not necessarily. He gave me a little scare and he told me I was getting sloppy. And so I got to start sharpening the game, but I wasn't ready to stop. So that wasn't that yet.
And so JV, dude.
The next one comes where it's Black Friday weekend and Thanksgiving weekend where it's like, you know, shoppers galore. And it's like, that's like a good opportunity for me because it's chaos. It's confusion. It's like stuff I can act like I can maneuver in. But at the same time, there's also heightened security. They got like, they know this is going to be a big, you know, big weekend. So they add more security to their things. I didn't consider that. And so I did my thing in a Best Buy and they had some secret shoppers watching me. And then I was doing like the returns and the buy. So some stuff I was buying, some stuff I was stealing, but it was on the thing. So they pulled me off the line and they said, listen.
Shoppers, huh?
Yeah. They're like, you didn't buy this stuff. We see that you are. So we're just going to take this. You take that. And, you know, that's how it's going to be. You know, like, and I was like, all right. I was like, you know, I understand how you be. He was like, you know, because I had stacks of receipts. But then I all of a sudden, instantly, I just, in my brain, I just went into a different mode. And I was like, all right, listen.
You were all fucking cracked out on meth right at this point.
I was, but I was still functioning as in like nobody would ever suspect it because I was young. I was good looking. I was like clean cut. I had my teeth, all that stuff. So they didn't think nothing like that.
Yeah.
But so instantly I go into like my deception mode and I'm like, All right, listen, I just want to pull you guys over. Come here. I'm like, oh, you. I was like, yeah, come here, you. I was like, I just want to tell you, I'm from corporate, and we're watching you guys. We're watching you guys. You guys are doing a fantastic job. This store has done the best so far. I was like, you guys have got the highest marks. I analyzed, dissect what I was doing, pull me out and defuse the situation without it escalating into a confrontation.
Everything de-escalation is one of the biggest things.
All this is being noted. I was like, all this is being noted. What's your name? I want your name. What's your name? And I'm going to be putting in a good word for you guys with the corporate. And they were like, thanks. They were like, thank you. Thank you. They were like, wow, we were on our A-game. I was like, excellent job, guys. And then walked out, dude. And
they let you keep the stuff, dude.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here, dog. Like, please.
And for some reason, I was like, let me roll with this. And it worked. I sold it. So, like, I got out of that. And then I was like, this is getting a little bit crazy. And then the final last time, I finally got pinched. And they actually arrested me this time. And I actually went to the county and posted a bail. It was like $500. And it was the first time I was ever arrested. First time I was ever, like, booked and stuff. I was scared. And
LA or
in above. LA. Yeah. LA. And I was out like within a day because I posted a bail, and then I had just like a court date, and I got a lawyer, and he basically, you know, got pretty much everything reduced down to like, you know, a minimal thing. It put me on probation. So it was kind of like the game was over now. Like, I knew the game was over, but at the same time, I was doing the crystal meth. And that's where, you know, like, that's where we'll cut, you know, part one off. But at the same time,
what the fuck? You can't leave me with another rack. No.
Cliffhanger.
Doug, we just got out of jail. Wait, Doug, I spent 2 weeks in jail. I was in a holding cell, and I could tell you there's more probability of you dying in county than dying in prison, because everyone's trying to get your fucking their stripes in jail and check you.
County is the worst.
Yeah, you will die.
You could go to prison.
Not you, but like, you know, anybody. Yeah, if you don't
prison, behave, prison is 10 times better than county. County,
because you're gonna live there. That's
the
your
lowest of the low, poorest of the poorest. They give you the least of the least, and they're the most overpopulated. But in LA County, they kick you out so fast. They're so overcrowded that they just kick you out. Like, if you're not like really serious crime, they just boot you out.
Especially,
like, they don't even want you. They're so overcrowded. Like, you can be doing like 18 months. They'll kick you out after 4 weeks and say goodbye. So that's a difference. You know, that's a good thing about it. But yeah. So now, while this was all going on, I was still doing I was still doing crystal meth. And my buddy, who was in the Bay Area, who was my dealer at the time, he fronted me an ounce of crystal meth to take back to Hollywood.
And then you flip
and start business.
Yeah.
Start a business. Cause I was like, you know what? I was like, you know what? I think I could build a business down there. I was like, there's a lot of demand. I was like, I think I could do some good stuff with it. And there's an opportunity to, you know, treat it like a business. And he was like, all right. I was like, he's like, he fronted me, and I went to Hollywood, and I wound up doing the whole bag by myself. I didn't sell one speck of it. I consumed the entire bag, and now I owed him. And I go back to him, and I'm like, listen, I'm like, I need another bag because I got people that want to buy. I was like, you know, it's been tough finding people. And, you know, I kind of did some of it. So I need another bag, and I'm going to get it rolling this time. And he gives me another one. So now I'm into him for like $3,000. I owe the guy. And now I'm like, I got to start finding people, man. So I find like these nickel and dime kids that are like, they're like squatters. They're like, they're just losers, but they're like, they squat in houses, buildings and stuff. And they steal people's mail. And they were trying to give me the mail for like, in exchange for some dope. And I was like, well, I don't want this stuff. They're like, no, you can do this. You could get credit cards, and you could get bank accounts, and you could do this and this. And I was like, that's interesting. I'm like, you know how to do this? Like, yeah, we know how to do it. We'll show you. And so they started showing me a little bit on how it works. They were taking people's mail, looking up their social security, going, you know, checking their bank account.
Bro.
And it was like, this is an opportunity.
This is for part two.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
So that's the cliffhanger. So we started segueing into selling, and then the whole mail game started entering. So I was done with the stores.
It's
the end of part one.
It's so funny.
It gets deep, man. It gets deep.
It's so funny, the people that you meet, bro.
You would never suspect it. Nobody suspects
it. No. I thought you were a trust fund kid. I know you probably went. No, don't get disrespected. But I thought.
Dude, I was a rich kid.
That you were a sheltered, privileged, Italian descent, New Yorker.
Wow.
But you know how, okay, for example.
Broken home, single mom.
you know how you have, let's say you're a different tax bracket. You are a different class than I am. Quite frankly, I live in a two-bedroom home, bro. I'm not wealthy, all right, bro? But like, I thought for a minute that you were, at a certain point, that you were.
Well, I was accomplished,
up here, right?
I
am. Not that you're not, but I mean,
right.
So funny how you could reflect on people, and little do you know,
yes.
The rugged, the bleeding elbows, the fucking dirt, you don't have, even rich people.
We're not
this
much different, bro.
This is
we're
wicked,
not much
bro.
Different. Like our origins, you know, we're different, but we're really not that much different. Like we have a lot of similarity things where we came from. But yeah, dude, like people that know me, and even after I did all that stuff and came back to and I got a job and was working, if I ever told them, like after knowing me for like a year, 2 years, and I said, yeah, by the way, I went to prison, and they would just be like, what? You did drugs? You committed a crime? Like, they're like, I would never, ever suspect you would even have, they were like, I would never suspect you to even think it or have any association with a life like that. And so nobody could believe it. It's just shocking.
No disrespect to the trust fund kids out there. They're amazing people. It's just some people have it harder than others. Dude, I'm hooked.
That's funny.
I'm
hooked.
I cannot believe you didn't sell this. Look, bro, I don't watch TV. I don't watch Netflix. Sell it as a fucking book or make a TV
the podcast
out of
it.
Netflix it, bro. You could sell this shit to a ghostwriter.
No,
and,
it's
or
definitely
a
show. Yeah, it's definitely a show. I mean, put it this way, when Breaking Bad came out, I was like in prison looking at the show, and I was like, how the fuck? I was like, that's what I was doing. No, one time. Well, no. Okay. Well, when I got convicted, like you'll see on the next fucking by part three, you know, there's a conviction in there.
I never seen Breaking Bad. Never seen Breaking Bad.
I mean, I went away for years. So like there things happened, you know, there was highs and lows. So that's what I'm saying. We all have a past, and you know, like I'm a light worker, and so you never know. And it's like, I don't hide it. And you know, whoever wants to judge could judge, but like we all have walks of life, and there's angels out there that you would never think could be an angel, but they are. And you don't go by what you see. It's like what's really on the inside. And you know, that's the point of this whole thing, is that to send the message that to anybody that has a past or has a dark side, we all have dark side. And so embrace it and recognize it, and don't try to like just hide it and be ashamed of it. It is what it is. Like we are human. So that's why
you can find him at Renegade Family of Light on Instagram. Ladies and gentlemen, that is JB. He's been here countless fucking times, and today he's bringing his personal intimate documentary. Make sure you drop a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. It allows other people to enjoy the show as much as I enjoy making it. And check us out at paranormalradio.com at Renegade Family of Light. Thank you so much, JB. See you next time, bro.
See you next time. Booyah.
Paranoid Radio.